Welcome to Inside the Match, where Alex and Simone talk residency applications.
We are two residents here to help you navigate the match.
For each podcast, we'll bring you residents from various specialties and backgrounds to give advice.
So today we have Ajibika. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So where are you in residency and what specialty are you in?
I am in Philadelphia at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. So I'm a categorical pediatrics resident in my third and final year.
You're almost done. Do you know what you're doing next year?
Yeah, so that's currently in flux. I am interested in hematology oncology, but admittedly, I wanted a little bit of diastole before I started fellowship. So I'm currently looking for hospitalist positions for the next year or two.
Very exciting. So if you feel comfortable answering, we'd love to start our podcast with some rapid fire questions. Were you AOA?
No, I was eligible for senior AOA and I applied, but I unfortunately was not selected.
Were you gold humanism?
Yes.
Were you president of your specialty club?
No.
Were you involved in research during medical school?
In my public health concurrent degree, I did a little bit of research on that side.
So what parts of your ERAS application did interviewers most commonly bring up during your interviews?
They really focused on my extracurriculars, to be honest, and kind of in two domains. So they asked me a lot of questions about my hobbies. And so things that I really love to do and I find restorative include narrative medicine, blogging, for which I have my own blog that I've had since my senior year of college, and also some fashion photography I've done off and on for the past 10 years or so. And so they really wanted to talk about all of those things and would kind of try and see if there are relationships between those interests and medicine. And there was clearly a more easy connection between the narrative medicine and blogging components as compared to photography to medicine. Otherwise, they really like to ask me questions about my volunteer experiences. So Tulane is where I went to medical school, and we have a really cool culinary medicine program just because New Orleans is so obsessed with food. Like food in the South is like not usually the most health conscious, and that's why it tastes so good. And so there are lots of, there's a lot of interest in tying how to cook in an affordable way and have things be tasty and health conscious. And so that was integrated into our curriculum. And then we had the opportunity to do more of that if we saw fit. And we also had like six free student clinics, which all of us are very involved with. And I was also very involved with that as well. And the last thing that people would ask me tons of questions about was my academic track. And so Tulane is one of the few programs that has a four-year MD and PH program. And so I elected to do that. And I concentrated in tropical medicine, which is a very atypical public health degree to begin with. And so I had a lot of questions about why I chose to do that. What does it look like to do two degrees at the same time in the span of 4 years? And if I was still taking classes in the midst of interview season, which I was.
Wow, you know, the teaching kitchen sounds really yummy, and what a unique way to get involved during medical school.
Wow, so great. I loved it. It was so fun.
So, did you ever get asked a tough question during the residency interview process?
Yeah, there are definitely a couple that come to mind, and I think that the reason they came off as tough, because I think that as I tell you the questions, they definitely forced me to think about things in the interview and outside of the interview, but a lot of it was the delivery as well. So one of the questions that I was asked was, have you thought carefully about your career plans? I'm not sure there's truly a niche in this field that you're describing to me. Would you be able to get paid? And to give some context, it's like kind of like a yikes question. To give some context, I am very interested in global hematology oncology. So I would like to do work in the space of diminishing and eliminating the disparities that we see in regards to outcomes, particularly for sickle cell care here as compared to abroad. And I have like a very particular interest in West Africa because I'm ethnically Nigerian. And so as I'm chit-chatting with this attending who does hematology oncology, mostly hematology work, I was flummoxed that he was not excited that I was interested in the same subspecialty, and honestly disheartened that he thought that there was no space for that. And I would just encourage anyone who is interested in doing something that's a little, not, I don't want to say abnormal because that sounds so unfavorable, doing something where you might be a pioneer. You really want to look for a space where they're excited about you having innovative ideas and that they have a culture of supporting individuals that do that. And so my response to him was something along the lines of, my interest in this field has been developing over the past 8 years or so. And I know that it's atypical, which is why I think that there is a need, because those disparities exist. And I think that there has to be some way for me to find a way to do this work that I'm passionate about and also find a way to have a roof over my head. I'm really looking for a residency program that can kind of help me and support me and link me up with mentorship that will help me navigate this process, because I found my why and I kind of think I know my how, but I really need some help to kind of flesh that part out. And do you think that this residency program would be able to help me do that? And so that's kind of how I responded to him. The other question that I had that was a little bit atypical, or tough rather, was, what do you want me to tell the intern selection committee about you? And I don't think that's a bad question, but I think it's hard when someone wants you to kind of pick your own one-liner about yourself. So you're kind of like, oh wow, there's so many things I hope you tell them about me. I hope you tell them a whole novella about me. I hope they want to read the second book in the series. But it's just like really challenging when you want, like when someone asks you just deadpan, so what's the one thing you want me to tell them about you? Yeah. And my response to her was that I bring a very unique perspective to medicine in multiple different aspects, and I believe strongly in the power of patient narratives, and I approach all of my patient encounters with that understanding that their stories are important. And I guess she took that back to the selection committee and allowed where I am. That happened to be at the institution where I ultimately ended up. So yeah, those were some of the most tough questions, and that like it really caught me on guard, and I don't think I had questions like that replicated elsewhere on my trail.
Those are incredibly challenging, and I'm looking forward to seeing where you go within your field of global hematology and show that you can get paid and be passionate for what you do.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
Did you ever get an inappropriate question on the interview trail? Because sometimes these can be so uncomfortable and we just don't know how to respond.
I did. And to give context for this before I launch into the question itself, I was at an interview at an awesome institution that I was strongly considering because I had family in the area. But I had noticed that the Black and brown representation was not necessarily what I would want. And just to give context, it's a big pediatrics program, and there was one Black resident across all 3 years, just one.
Yikes.
And so I go to have my meeting with the head of the diversity and inclusion program, and she happened to be Caucasian, which I don't think is necessarily a problem, but I think I was a little startled by that too. And she just looked frankly at me and was like, listen, we need someone who will be brave. We need a Black individual to come here and prove to other Black and brown folk that there's nothing to be scared about here. Would you be comfortable as the only Black resident in this program? And I think, I don't know what your thoughts are on that delivery. I hated it.
Yeah.
I hated that question. And I think that it's a question that all like you or I am, or like underrepresented minority folk, have to think about, because in most programs, diversity is something that they're still working on. And it's very unlikely that you will enter a space where there are tons of people that look like you from the resident or faculty perspective, but it's like an ongoing journey. And residency programs are different parts of that journey. Like some of them are doing awesome in that regard. Some of them are like just getting themselves together. And you really have to think about what you need to feel supported in a residency program, and if you need to see people that look like you at work, or do you just need to have people in the community that look like you that you can debrief with if something comes up. And so I didn't hate the question. I thought the delivery was very strange, and I was surprised to be asked that in the context of an interview. I had many residents who were Black and Brown kind of talk to me about those themes, which I think we often do when we see Black and Brown residents, to just kind of get a sense of what they need to make sure our program is a safe space for them. My response to her when she asked me this question was that I have been the sole Black or Brown individual in many institutions that I have traversed through, so it wouldn't be a new experience for me, but it's not my preferred experience. And that I ultimately, at the end of my interview day, want to get a sense of whether or not this space would be safe for me to be the only Black resident in this space, and to kind of identify if there are reasons why individuals don't come here who look like me. And she was like, okay, that's a good answer. And I think that was the best I could do. It was just very interesting. It was just like a strange time.
Yes, I mean, that's a great question. And I'd be curious if that individual is still asking that question and whether she has learned to improve the delivery on it, even though, you know, she is looking to get a response and trying to encourage you to think about whether or not you would enjoy being at that program. And it's definitely not the best way to ask it.
Yeah, definitely. It's like really important theme, really important concept. Delivery, maybe not the best.
So, you know, a lot of times we get a small chunk of time to talk with the program director and ask him or her questions. What questions would you advise that an applicant ask of a program director during an interview?
Yeah, I think that programs that have applicants chat with a program director are amazing, because I really think program directors are truly the heart of the program. They really set the culture of the residency program. And so I think the main question that I asked program directors on my trail was, what do you think would make someone a poor fit for this program? And I think what's useful about that question is that it really gets them to kind of spill the tea about what has made people unsuccessful in the past. And that kind of gives you some information about what do you need to thrive in that program, so that you're not one of those individuals. Like, answers that came up for me were people who weren't very organized, people who get really stressed in the space of acuity, people who didn't have family support because the residency is pretty hard. And if you don't have anyone, it can be challenging. So just like hearing them say the specific things that they think contributed to people not doing as well in residency as they would like was like an easy way to kind of determine if I felt like I would thrive in that space. And I think hearing from the program director is like the best way to get information about that. And I think because the program director really is thinking about what comes next for the residency, I think it's helpful to also ask them like what changes they anticipate. Like, what is this residency moving towards? And I think that gives you a good like sneak peek in regards to if they're trying to do a little bit more clinic, or if they're trying to reduce clinic. And you can think about, what are your ultimate goals and needs? Like, the direction that this residency program is heading towards, is that a direction that's gonna push me closer to what I want in regards to my career, or not so much?
So there's also times where we get these opportunities to meet with residents at pre-interview dinners. And this year they're virtual for the first time. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure that applicants get their questions answered. Are there any recommendations for questions to ask these residents during these dinners?
Yeah, for sure. I think before everything became virtual, I would recommend that applicants just like really look at the dynamic between the residents, because I think that's so telling. But it's really hard to get a good sense about how residents get along with other residents when it's all like virtual communication, and like we're not our best selves virtually, because even though we're like, many of us grew up with all of these gadgets, like it's still weird. It's still not as organic. And so a couple of questions I've been telling my mentees to ask when they come across this time of like these virtual happy hours is to kind of ask the questions that only residents can answer. So like, what is the relationship between the residents and program leadership? Is it a hostile relationship? Is program leadership willing to change? Are they flexible? Like, I think that is like a huge thing and crucial to know before you start at a program. And I think that it's like a benign enough question that residents will be pretty transparent with their answer. I think trying to gauge whether or not people are happy is important because you, of course, want to be happy. And I think that there are multiple ways you can and can't ask this. But what I have seen done pretty well is, like, I know residency is hard and I know it's really tiring and I know it's super different from medical school. Do you feel like you're happy and fulfilled here? And I think that that is a really good way to ask that question, because when someone's post-call and they just happen to show up to one of these happy hours, they are not living their best life. And so, like, I think it's a good reminder to, like, add into the question, like, despite being tired, despite being overworked, despite being potentially post-call, like, overall, like, what are your general feelings? So I think that's a really important question. I think another really good one, and I think people have to ask this carefully, is to ask people, what is the thing that you don't love? And of course, you can't just ask it like that, because some residents will be like, why are they trying to sniff out all the bad things about this program? What's their deal? And so I think if you ask it in such a way that you're like, if you could change one thing about your residency experience, what would that be? People will be more frank and honest. Like, I had someone tell me at an interview, like, our ED experience is hectic. It is really stressful. I love everything else, but it's really stressful. And I don't love the ED. And I was like, wow, this is the first place where someone told me their ED experience is horrendous. Like, this is probably not the place where I want to, like, traipse in and out of the ED when I already know I don't like that type of medicine. And I think it's helpful to ask almost everyone you encounter this following question, like, how do you describe the personality of the program? Because it's helpful to hear in the words of, like, all levels of interactions, like attendings, residents, like, it's just helpful to hear what people think about that. And I think that other questions that I ask residents that I don't think have to be the priority, because I feel like interactions are so limited, but, like, if there's time, like, asking about, like, what does the class typically look like? And, like, what is the personality of your year? And I also think, like, asking for the breakdown of, like, how many individuals are single here versus in a committed relationship versus married, or, like, how many people are parents? I think that information is helpful. And I think it really changes significantly geographically. Like, I interviewed a lot in the South, and a lot of programs were, like, 65% married, and I'm an unmarried person. I was like, what am I going to do on my days off? Like, it's like, what is that going to look like? And so I think you can also ask, like, the residents about, like, what that breakdown looks like, because that also will define what your social circumstances will be within your residency program as well.
Wow, you have provided awesome tips that are so thoughtful for every single specialty about the interview process. But, you know, let's talk about the ranking process for a moment. It is such a stressful element of this whole match journey when it comes to January and February and you're done with your interviews. So what advice do you give upon making a rank list?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And I think, like, one of the things that I did that I think worked really nicely for me was to make sure I wrote a little recap about each interview before I had my next one. So if I had three interviews in a row, it's like, oh, I need to get this, like, together. I need to write my recap right now because another one is coming up tomorrow, the day after. If my interview is spaced out by a week, I can give myself time to decompress. And in the space of writing that recap, I had had little sections where I put what I thought would be my priority. So I put, what is the environment like? And I put, like, in regards to the people, in regards to engagements with attendings, is it hierarchical? In regards to the city itself. I also put things about, like, what is the subspecialty space like? What is the exposure to gen peds versus subspecialty? What is the inpatient to outpatient ratio? Like, I just put a lot of, like, different things that I knew were aspects that matter to me on this little recap, and I, like, filled it out after each interview, and I wrote, like, my overall impression at the bottom. And it had to include a couple of things. It had to include what I thought about the interview, and it had to include what I thought my fit would be like there, and it had to include, like, what I thought about the residents' dynamic with one another. So, like, for one interview, I recognized that a lot of the residents didn't know each other, and I was like, that concerns me. Like, people can get lost here, even amongst their peers. And so I had all these different recaps, And I ranked my programs after each interview because I felt like my feelings in the process during that time period could very well get like murky and like confusing as anxiety builds as you're getting ready to submit the list. And so like I just changed where every school was, or sorry, every institution was after each interview before I did my next one. And so I had an ongoing rank list. And I thought that that was a really good thing that I did because I felt myself freaking out when it was time to get ready to submit my rank list. And I was trying to change all these things based off of emotional components that I don't think are helpful. Like, I don't remember if they seemed as enthusiastic about me as this other place. And like, those are not reasons. That's like not what you should be building into your rank list. And I think like, as you talk with other people, as you get stressed, you like really forget how you felt that day of. And that's why I kind of ranked as I went. And I think like some people will love that idea, some people won't. Like it's really what people need to do. But I think ultimately the biggest thing is that people need to be really frank and honest with themselves about what they ultimately need out of residency. And I think that what I think people need is a place that they can grow academically, a place that gives them the opportunities to grow professionally, and enough opportunities outside the hospital to refill their cup. Because I think ultimately, although we all love medicine, medicine is not enough to drive you through enjoying and thriving in residency. And I think people have different subcomponents in those categories that are important and necessary to like meet their needs academically, professionally, and like socially. And they have to really think about what those things are and rank according to what types of programs are going to fulfill majority of those needs. And I can't really tell people what that looks like for them. For me, like location was a big deal. Being able to like do a lot of like active things because I'm an ex-athlete. being close to family was super important to me as someone who's very close to my family. Being in a space that had fellows because I want to do subspecialty work and I wanted to be able to see like, what is the lifestyle of the fellows at this program? Like, would I want to stay here for fellowship was helpful for me and I wanted to be in a big program. So those things were things that I thought about, but people just have to think carefully about what they think is going to fulfill those three different domains and to recognize that those three domains are equal. It's like awesome to be at a program that has great mentorship and has great like academic series, but if you are isolated, you don't feel connected to anyone, it's really hard for you to make the effort to like engage with your mentor or like focus in lectures if you're just like not feeling good about life in general.
You have explained those things so eloquently, and I wish that I, you know, had that sort of lecture when you, when I was making my rank list. And I think that is such a great way for anyone of every specialty to think about how they're putting their list together. So, you know, you gave us great tips for how to put together, you know, our interviews, our questions, our rank list. But, you know, another question that I have for you is fourth year can be so overwhelming when it comes to this whole match process. But then afterwards, you know, there is some time to be able to do other things. And something that I noted within your social media account is the importance of advocacy. And I was wondering if you can explain to us how applicants and how fourth year medical students can use social media for advocacy to assist them as they start residency in the future.
Yeah, I think that's such a beautiful question. I think what's really awesome about the intersection between social media and medicine is that it's making the field of medicine, which already kind of seems small, far smaller. And I think what's awesome about that is that your efforts to work on projects that spark joy for you are not limited by where you are geographically. Like for example, I know for me going to medical school in Louisiana, there are just certain things that people are not excited to work on. Like every time I had like transgender patients, like attendings were just like, what is this? And I was like, there needs to be more for these individuals. And they're like, I guess, like they just weren't excited because like that was not the culture of Louisiana as compared to Philadelphia where we have a huge gender clinic at CHOP. And like, there's a huge like network and like bevy of support for patients that are, who identify as transgender. And that is like an amazing thing. And I think that as I was navigating my fourth year diastole and trying to figure out things that could be exciting and also distract me from thinking about MATCH, like I was reaching out to like residents and medical students and other spaces to kind of get a sense of what projects I could help with from afar and to get a sense of like what their advocacy community looks like, because it's very different depending on where you go geographically. I think that when you're making these connections with social media, it's really important to think about the level of training for the person you're reaching out to. So I think that social media can seem casual, but it's really important to address people by their titles as they're reaching out to you. Like I've had medical students reach out to me and be like, "Hey girl," and I'm like, "I am not your girl. I'm like, I don't know if I'm gonna involve you in these efforts." Of course, like it's a small thing, but it does say a lot to like address people the way that they should be addressed, at least for initial chat. I think people can give a lot of advice in regards to things that you're working on, even if they can't necessarily get involved. Like I've had people give me advice in regards to where I should reach out for funding for a project or people I should connect with and talk with about trying to get a project off the ground. And I think that that's really awesome. And I think that fourth years can kind of like navigate that space a little bit before they start residency, because I think it's harder to kind of learn the ropes while you're working so hard as a resident and trying to learn potentially a new hospital system and potentially a new EMR. But I think that that's a great time during fourth year to kind of jump into that and kind of see what's available. And also to just kind of think about what advocacy efforts you want to pursue as a resident, because I think at least in pediatrics, I can't speak for other subspecialties, it's generally required to do some sort of advocacy and to have an advocacy project, if not more than just one. So it's something that we're always thinking about and we're like primed to have that involved in our residency experiences. But I think that it is useful for people to think about what impact they want to make as a resident. And I think if you can do that before you start, that's really helpful.
Those are great tips. And first thing, everyone should have a social media professional page on Twitter to be able to communicate and to be able to learn from awesome people like yourself. So we like to end our podcast by having everyone share a fun fact. So share a fun fact about yourself.
Sure. So I am very tall now. I'm 5'9", but I haven't always been this tall. So in my early adolescence, I was actually a competitive gymnast and I got to meet Dominique Dawes, who is an Olympian, who was amazing. And she was the guest judge for one of my meets where she gave me 3 golds and 1 silver. So I was like one of the happiest days of my adolescent life.
Oh, cool. And then came MATCH. So that's all the time we have today with Ajumika. Thanks for joining us at Inside the MATCH. Special thanks to Kevin McCoyd for the music, and be sure to follow or subscribe to our podcast. Catch our next podcast to learn more application tips and hear from another awesome resident.